It's a week to go before the official end of the presidential preference primary season. Say that really fast. It started in Iowa a long time ago, and it's ending in South Dakota and California and New Mexico and Montana next week. So now what? Well, in podcast 507, get ready for some surprises. Maybe. Well, I have to say that before we start the podcast, I went to my yoga sculpt class tonight, and I have to say that when I started doing yoga, I just did one kind of yoga. I did the hot yoga, where you're in these crowded rooms, it's over 100 degrees, and everyone's sweating, and you do what you do. And then I kind of progressed to other kinds of yoga, same amount of heat and everything, and I started doing these yoga sculpt things. And the first yoga sculpts I did, it's basically power yoga with weights. You know, if you do CrossFit, you would laugh at it. But I don't, because I'm older and it's difficult, and I could do one a week. And now I'm up to three, sometimes four a week. And for the first time tonight, I thought to myself, you know, I could actually do another sculpt tomorrow, because usually I alternate between the hot and the sculpt. Why is this? Well, A, I'm getting stronger. But B, I use a product called Hydrus. This is a high-performance beverage you mix with water that uses exclusive nanosome technology to deliver critical electrolytes with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. There is no sugar in it. It's safe, and it gets your muscles hydrated. So here's the result. The result is you don't have to take breaks. You sweat differently. You remain hydrated while other people are laying out on the floor. And whether you do cycling or CrossFit or play hockey, or you have people that you love that do competitive sports, you know, you are going to find that this will transform your practice. I wake up the next day and I'm not sore. And so that's why I think, well, I think I'll do another sculpt today, or I think I'll double dip. You know, I'll do a power yoga and a hot yoga in the same session, because I'm not sore. And at my age, it's a huge thing. And I'm actually now drinking Hydrus as we speak, because I've also found that in doing podcasts, it helps keep me hydrated for that reason. Now, you can't drink it all day. Some people do, but it's an amazing product. If you want to learn more, join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S, Performance.com. It's being used by tennis players. It's being used by those sailing guys who do the, what do they call that, competitive sailing. It's being used by wrestlers. It's being used by CrossFit athletes. And I'm not talking about people that just do CrossFit. I'm talking about these guys that do these CrossFit competitions. And it makes a huge, huge difference, because you can go back and train the very next day after a competition. So there's lots of data and information about Hydrus at HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Well, I was going to say that it's difficult to talk about politics right now. It's never difficult for me to talk about politics. I guess it could be said that it sometimes can be difficult to do a podcast about politics or to do media about politics, just because you want to add to the discourse. You know, I could turn the microphone on and just bray, ad lib, and just talk about stuff and my responses to stuff, but I continually and increasingly find that doesn't advance the story. It doesn't add to the discourse. And the thing that's driving me crazy right now, and most of the time it's because I monitor by reading what is said. I don't know that I could ever even watch it. But it seems like the media is just one big partisan fest on the right and on the left. And this is not going to be a podcast about media. So I'm just giving you a heads up. I'm not going to sit here and spend the next, you know, half hour talking about media and try to tie it into politics. But there just is an absence of observation and reporting facts that help people think about issues. You know, I just did a podcast, the last podcast, extensively about technology and the, you know, consumer electronics show is going on in I guess Las Vegas right now. And there's very little reporting on that stuff in non-election years. Generally, there's a lot of reporting on technology. This year, there really isn't that much. So then I think, well, I'm not sure anybody really even wants help with facts to help them decide. I think a lot of people have just made up their minds already to either be disappointed with the outcome of the two mainline political party conventions or not. And I don't know that people even care. So what's on TV and what's on your computer and what's on YouTube and what's on all this stuff aside from videos of the gorilla or predictions of the end of the world? A lot of people trying to explain the Trump phenomenon, which is silliness. And I mean these analysts. And the most silly of all of them is the Hitler comparisons. People saying things, people writing things, offered as proof that Trump is some kind of Hitler in waiting and that we would be well served by warning the population and that somehow this is responsible and the responsible thing to do. This is just an add-on to the superstructure of the Trump as authoritarian reasoning that I talked about earlier in the year. It's always a nice way to call him a fascist. Now they're saying Hitler is experiencing a burst of interest, which is substantiated by what? It's substantiated by some polls in Europe and some sale of some books and movies in Europe as proof that suddenly there's a resurgence of Hitler and that people who are excited about a Trump candidacy are really all about fascism and fascists. And again, I would encourage people, if you're really interested in this, to look at the origins of fascism in Italy in the 1920s and Germany in the 1930s. Fascism's roots are not right wing. Its roots are socialism versus communism in a third way that is center left, not right, quote unquote, right wing. Conservatives at the time in the 1920s and 30s in Italy and Germany were for the continuation of democratic institutions in those countries, not fascism. It was essentially a center-left third way between socialism and communism. And the conditions that predicate fascism are a complete failure of socialism. What does that look like? Well, it doesn't look like the United States under Barack Obama. I'm sorry to tell conservatives, quote-unquote conservatives in the United States. It looks like Venezuela. That's what a failure of socialism looks like. Brazil is seeing that. Venezuela is seeing that. And what will be the solution to that in Venezuela and Brazil? Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty simple. It will be the suspension of democratic institutions and the arrival of some sort of military coup. I think you're going to see it in Venezuela long before there's any kind of a democratic solution. A socialist breakdown predicates, especially in Latin America and places like that, the need for the military to step in as the one political institution that can be depended on to make the quote-unquote trains run on time, or literally to fill the shelves with product like toilet paper if it's necessary. But none of these facts stop the anti-Trump crowd from saying that he might not be Hitler or a fascist, but people supporting him act like the supporters of Hitler and fascists in the 1930s. Well, the conditions are completely different. Things may be one certain way in the United States, but we are hardly in the position of the Weimar Republic in 2016 in this country, regardless of the Barack Obama presidency. And by the way, La Raza and Black Lives Matter also act like fascists. Are they fascists? Meanwhile, and this is the part that really is interesting to me, the suicide of top media talkers continues. Everybody's heard about the Glenn Beck suspension by Sirius, which may or may not mean anything, but it was because Beck had a guest on talking about resorting to armed confrontation if Trump gets elected. And, you know, lest some of you tut, tut, tut about this, this is backed up by some of the comments that I've seen on Facebook and Twitter this week. And this is, how can I put this? There are some supporters of Ted Cruz who are very much of the opinion that he was the last best hope for the republic and the nation and the Christian way, and that now it is too late and the devil is going to take over and it's to the mattresses. And I've seen a number of these comments. I've heard a number of these comments. I used to hang up on people that said this on the radio because it's absolutely stupid. And I don't mean to mince words. These people are just really dumb. And I hesitate to add, but I'm going to, that if you're a Democrat, if you're a liberal, if you're a socialist, you have nothing to fear from mid-50s white men with their fat bellies, department store shotguns, and AR-15s. they would last about 3 days tromping around the forest. There is a reason why war is for the young, because it is really hard on your body. And aside from the fact that all of them think that they'll be lieutenant colonels in and generals in some ad hoc army that they'll command, nobody wants to be a lowly dog face who does the fighting. And if you look for proof, you need to look no further than the great militia takeover of the forestry facility in Oregon, and the fact that they ended up being apprehended because they had to go to the grocery store. So I'm sorry to laugh, but my God, people who think that we're going to have some sort of armed revolution because the candidate that you were supporting, and by the way, I'm not suggesting that all Ted Cruz supporters are like this, but some of them are, sincerely believe that the only step after this is now civil war. The good news is they're just not very smart at best, and that's being kind. So there's that. And then you have Sean Hannity, who can barely contain himself, sucking up to Trump with his wide-eyed suggestions in an interview. First of all, I'm voting for Trump, he has to tell everybody. And secondly, he suggested that Trump put everything down in writing, which is really idiotic because Donald Trump is not going to put anything in writing, and position papers or do any of that stuff on websites like Barack Obama did, that, the long and involved position papers that described his policy ideas. Because he wants to be able to maneuver and say, I never said that, or take it back, or not recall what he said, because he's entirely rhetorical. So it's so amusing me to see someone, to see someone like Sean Hannity interviewing Trump, telling him he's going to vote for him, and as though that means something to anyone, and then say, you really need to put everything that you're saying in writing. I mean, it's just beyond, it is pure comedy. But I reserve my greatest derision for William Kristol and the ill-fated third-party establishment candidacy of David French. Who? Yeah, David French, or someone else, that we can find, anyone else. And also Eric Erickson of the former Red State blog, which is now just the Black and Blue blog because he keeps tripping over his shoestrings and falling down the back stairs on his way out the door. Eric Erickson is now fully in Glenn Beck territory. He has what I refer to as talk radio cancer. This is an affliction of thinking that, number one, people are listening, and two, they actually care what you think. It's a lesson I learned the hard way, and it's untreatable and fatal unless you're really, really lucky. But watch these people, because they're in the process of laying the groundwork for an attack on the Trump majority at Cleveland. They have faux presidential candidates. David French is just the latest placeholder. But Mitt Romney continues to sort of be in the shadows, in the wings with his cape on, just waiting for an opportunity to emerge as a possible choice, as is Paul Ryan, I believe. So ask yourself, what could be engineered to make the delegates who actually choose a nominee to choose someone other than Trump? Let me ask that question again. What could be engineered to make the delegates, or to cause the delegates, or to encourage the delegates at the national convention who are actually choosing the nominee to choose someone other than Trump? First of all, the possibility of a third-party candidacy. So that's the first thing that has to happen to sort of soften up the beach. Second, the possibility real dirt could emerge on Trump. I just read tonight David K. Johnson's piece on Trump's mob ties. I'd suggest people read it because there actually is some meat there. And if more details are fleshed out by the mainstream media, like the New York Times, then this thing could end up being pretty damning. Is this it? I don't know. But just denying it, as Trump has done, won't make it go away. What is it? And well, there's a lot of questions about the people that helped build the Trump Tower, and there are lots of questions about the people that he has associated with over the years. And there's a lot of questions about how he got his casino license. Let's just put it that way without going into a long and involved thing. So if you're in business for yourself, how do you say to your clients, you're awesome and thank you? Because the biggest problem, and I've learned this in business, is client attrition. You want to keep your best clients. You know, people come in and out in terms of being clients for various reasons, and appreciation and showing appreciation to them is one of the biggest problems that we have in small business. And I could go through a whole list of stuff that people do to show appreciation. Most of the time it involves going out and eating. But I'm going to suggest a different and social and memorable experience that allows you to socialize and bond with your clients who are doing something fun and creative and unique, and in an environment that's really conducive to social, you know, kind of experience. It's Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. This is its new thing where people paint a painting. And they hold these fabulous events in a relaxed and social setting. What happens is an artist, a real artist, guides your team, you know, your clients as a group through the featured painting step by step. Now, this is not work. You don't have to have experience, but people are going to come away with a painting, and they actually do it. And people are amazed. They are like, I don't have any talent at all, and look what I did. And they hang these things on their walls. But here's the thing. Brush Studio events aren't about painting, but socializing and working together, because they've got catering from Crave in the West End. They've got over 22 brands of beer. They have an extensive wine collection. And again, it is a fun, new, sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience. Your clients are not going to forget. They're going to tell their friends about it. They're going to remember you permanently for it, and they'll love you for it. And here's the thing. You can go around and see what everybody's doing and communicate with them and bond with your clients in a way that you probably could not do on a boat trip or having a dinner at some steak place, although I don't want to underrate the dinners at the steak places. So here's what you do if you want more information. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, or visit brushstudio.net. They're ready to work with you now to put on a great event. They are event planning ninjas for your clients. You can also reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. The other thing being floated by people like Bush Foundation founding board member and Ambassador James Glassman is that somehow big negatives for both Trump and Clinton mean that the country is, quote, crying out for a third party candidate. This is this idea that with high negatives for both Clinton and Trump, this suggests that there's room or space, let's just put it that way, to talk in marketing terms, for some third-party guy who somehow can win. And it's actually, it's just another version of the he can't win line of reasoning, which is now appearing in Democratic venues, written by Democratic analysts that basically say Trump can't win Florida, New York, Illinois, California, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And so, boom. This means that he can't win an electoral victory. Now, there is a third-party candidate, which I'll talk about later, which are the Libertarians. I don't know that a David French is anyone that could be put up as a third-party candidate, which is why I say he's a placeholder. I think the electoral arguments that Trump can't win are actually coming from establishment Republicans, you know, because here's the way this works, and I feel the need to explain this. People write stuff as op-ed pieces or as actual news pieces that appear on Real Clear Politics or appear in the National Review or appear in Forbes or appear in, you know, the Atlantic Monthly. And they don't necessarily have to be Republican publications, but they get them in all sorts of publications across the political spectrum. And then it sort of generates talk on talk radio and on places like Fox News and so forth, and it kind of works its way into the discourse. And this is why a lot of times I'll talk about stuff and you won't see it until 2 or 3 months later, because I really focus on what is being written in terms of op-ed, because it's a good indication of where thinking is going. What I've been doing lately is looking at who's planting these stories, see who wrote them, and look at their pedigree, and you start to figure out, oh, okay, so this is where this thing is coming from. So those are the two things. And then the third thing is there's now suddenly more analysis, and not very good analysis at that, that attempts to explain how the voters have realigned in 2016, and the GOP is a Middle West rural party. And so, yeah, there's going to be no matter who the Republicans nominate, they're going to have electoral problems. Well, I mean, you could almost make the same argument of the Democrats in that they are largely an East Coast and West Coast urban party, and that they're going to have electoral problems because in the Midwest and in the Mid-South and the South, they're going to have problems. So I don't know that you could say Trump couldn't win Florida and Trump couldn't win Ohio, especially at this point in time. What is this? You know, whether it is William Kristol and David French, whom no one has ever heard of as a potential third-party challenger to Trump, because Trump can't win, he has mob ties, the voters have realigned, and we need to bring them back in, and so forth and so on. What is this? It's a classic establishment trick of presenting the internationalists strong on defense and national security positions with the man of God positions, which is where David French comes in order to activate two disaffected constituencies, the evangelist Christian Ted Cruz group, who is very disillusioned right now because Cruz pulled out unexpectedly. And if you look at Bernie Sanders staying in, I'm so surprised that Ted Cruz did not stay in, because clearly Bernie has decided to stay and fight. And then the establishment moderate Republican group. So they put together this man of God, you know, strong on defense, traditional American patriot nonsense with the traditional establishment moderate Republican group, which really acts like Democrats. And that, again, it's that old Republican moderate coalition. And I'm going to tell you, don't laugh, because this is the core of the GOP, and they are still in control in a large, to a large degree, in state parties across the country and the national party. And if I was going to write a scenario, it would be this. I still think something will come out on Trump that will put these people back in play before the first ballot at the RNC. You know, in their defense, I do think voters have realigned on both sides of the spectrum, but I think it's difficult, if not impossible, to define how the pools of support have changed nationally, because we just don't have very good data. It's so new. There isn't a lot of voting data. We just have polls. And, you know, the polls are unreliable in terms of determining the mood of the electorate. You can certainly point to poll and say this guy is doing better than that guy. But when it comes to that really complex data about attitudinal research, it's shaky to make predictions or statements about where people are headed or what they're thinking based on that kind of polling information. And I think we're going to have to let voters tell us how they have realigned without trying to predict the future. But that's not going to stop the charlatans from using the opportunity to say, this is where people are headed and here's why and this is what we need to do and so forth and so on. And it's hard to tell what is going on, since so many people in media are telling us and are so busy telling us what is going on with us. Who knows? And by the way, we can't trust any of these people to give us balanced information anyway, which is one of the reasons, if you listen to one of my podcasts that I did, I can't remember which one, about the end of the world stuff. It was somewhere before 500, like 499 or 498 or something, when I did all the stuff from YouTube. You know, the basis of that podcast was, do people understand or even care about the difference between a Russia Today or an InfoWars and quote-unquote balanced news from a reliable source like the LA Times or the New York Times? Well, the fact is that the New York Times and the LA Times and the whatever Times aren't any more reliable in some cases than an InfoWars. That's part of the problem in this country, is people have lost the ability to discern what is valuable information. And if you don't have it, you got to do what I do, where you go through this stuff, you only read and you look for those positions that you see again and again and again, and eventually you develop a paradigm that you can work from where you can kind of figure this stuff out. Now, you know, I'm not going to continue to rake Republicans over the coals. I'm just saying this thing ain't over yet. But on the Democratic side, it also isn't over yet. Bernie Sanders is giving Democrats fits. And this is the thing that's interesting, man. Just one more thing about Republicans. As I said before, this is what Ted Cruz could be doing right now to Donald Trump, but he quit. And I find that fascinating, because Bernie Sanders will not quit. More articles this week about how Bernie Sanders refuses to quit, and he is fighting the Democratic establishment and giving Hillary Clinton fits. The email server thing is one thing. I don't think it's going to make any difference, because I think the issue here is intent legally. But beyond that, here again, the media has been saying that she has this big lead largely because of superdelegates. Well, Sanders hates that system, as does, by the way, Russ Feingold, and he isn't going to give up. Now, It's very interesting because I had a story tonight that I had printed up a while ago and was just sort of sitting on my desk that talked about the big double-digit lead of Clinton over Sanders in California less than a month ago and how that meant that he had no chance of being the nominee and so forth and so on. Now suddenly they're neck and neck in California. And they're saying, well, even if he wins California, he has no chance. And even if he does very well, they're still going to split the delegates in California, blah, 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 because California apparently is proportional. If he wins California, and even if he doesn't win New Jersey or the other late primary states, he has a big chit going into the Philadelphia convention this summer for Democrats. And there is clearly a split between progressives and establishment Democrats. And the establishment isn't favored by and large on the left anymore than they are on the right. They are tired of being told, sit down and shut up and do this. You know, does that mean that they're going to nominate Hillary Clinton or nominate Bernie Sanders? Well, I think the Democrats go after the Republicans in terms of convention. So what the Republicans do may influence what the Democrats do. And there may be a bigger fight in Philadelphia than there is in Cleveland, although there may be fights at both. And then the Libertarians nominated who? Who did they nominate? You tell me. William Weld is going to be the vice presidential candidate on the ticket. This has upset many people in libertarian circles since Weld was a Bush supporter at one point. Critics also say Gary Johnson and Weld represent liberals and not libertarians. Watch where that criticism comes from, because in some polls they're getting as much as 10%. So this may be a great year for libertarians just because of the disaffected Republican and Democrats. If people know these guys exist, then it's going to be they could conceivably do very well as third party candidates. And it's so interesting to me that people like William Crystal keep talking about a third party candidacy. And it's like, well, there's your third party candidacy right there. It's Gary Johnson and William Weld. And here's the other question. Should Johnson and Weld be included in presidential and vice presidential debates after the conventions? I think they should, especially since they're garnering, in some cases, 10% of the vote. Watch what happens when they try to keep them out. Now, this supports my view that what's happening is our elected leaders, especially in legislatures, both at the federal level and the state level, are looking and heading in one direction, and the people are looking and heading in another direction. I am not sure that we know as the people what we want. I think we're dealing with some very complicated issues, and I think it's hard for people to suss out what the right thing to do is. We know how we feel. We know what we think should be done. Some of us check ourselves. Some of us just say what we think. Some of us are concerned about different things. Some of us are more concerned about one thing versus another. But we do know that we are not happy with the way things are and we want something different. And this feeling isn't limited to Republicans. This is also true in Democrat circles. And I have friends who are very committed socialists, and I have friends who are very committed Democrats. And neither of them are happy with what's happening on the Democrat side. So it's a very tough time to try to figure out what's going on. It's a very tough time to be an elected official. And by the way, this isn't to let them off the hook. It's just that if you're an elected official, really, Republican or Democrat, and you're dumb, which most of them actually are, then you're in a pickle. And if you're dumb and timid, you're really in a pickle. This is the kind of electoral environment that really requires talent. The biggest problem I think we have is the penchant of the media for predicting the future and for explaining why people are doing what they're doing when nobody really knows why we're doing what we're doing or why we think what we think. You know, we can all take stabs at it. You can say Trump's supporters are fascists. You can say Trump supporters are frustrated and angry and they just want a voice. You can say fill in the blank. Your theory is as good as mine on a lot of this, because most of it has no basis in there's no substantiating facts to back it up. Because again, if you're just going to use polls, then you may as well just throw that in the trash and just say what you think. The truth is, Donald Trump may have some problems getting the nomination, but so might Hillary Clinton. And we could, I'm not saying we are, but we could end up with a completely different race after the conventions than we have now. And that would be actually okay with me. If we had a Bernie Sanders and some other candidate on the Republican side, or a Bernie Sanders Trump race, I'm not sure it would be a bad thing. So I don't think anything is cast in stone at this point. Yeah, you can probably say that it looks like Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee and that Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee, much to the chagrin of people like William Kristol. And I have to say this, I don't like Trump's positions. I don't agree with his policy ideas, whatever they are, because number one, they change constantly. And number two, they don't make any sense. I'm not a trade protectionist. I don't believe in raising the minimum wage. You know, I could go on and on. I'm not going to, but there's nothing I agree with Trump on for the most part. But I do take pleasure in seeing him just shred the Republican establishment in ways that Ted Cruz would never have been able to do. And that is satisfying. Watching William Kristol twist and spin and watching Eric Erickson fall down the stairs and watching Glenn Beck make a fool of himself gives me so much pleasure. I can't help myself. That is my Schadenfreude, so to speak. So, whatever happens, happens. People say, what's going to happen? And I don't know what's going to happen. In 2000 and in 2004 and in 2008, even in 2012, you could predict. Even in 2014 with the congressional race, you could sort of see what was going to happen. You know, I don't think you can say that about this race, and I think that's really interesting. The outcome? Well, the outcome is another thing entirely. We will have to leave it to the wisdom of the American people and the stability of the American Republic and cross our fingers that things will be okay. But none of it, for me personally, leads me to conclude that these people who we're electing are going to do the things that need to get done to build the kind of future that we need to have. And I've detailed that in my technology podcast. So I don't like any of them. And I don't like any of the congressional candidates. And I don't like any of the state legislatures candidates, because I think those guys are literally headed in 180 degrees the wrong direction. You know what's coming up, and I'm super excited about it, the EAA Air Show at Oshkosh, and I've got to get on the phone to those people and figure out where we're going to park Mobile Podcast Command, because I love going there, because Alpha Systems will probably be in Building 3 again, displaying the Alpha Systems AOA indicator. This is a revolutionary system that gives you a visual indicator of your angle of attack on the final approach, and this is what saves lives. If you don't believe me, check out Alpha Systems website. All you have to do is click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. It will take you to their page. There's videos and all kinds of information about the lives that have been saved and how the AOA indicator works, again, at thebobdavispodcast.com. If you're a pilot, you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. You want to get there, but you want to get there safely. Alpha makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. They started the AOA revolution. Remember, Alpha Systems is FAA approved. They want to get it into your package today. So check it out if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. All right, so that's your political update. And I don't think I'll do another one before June 7th. And I still haven't decided whether I'm going out to South Dakota for the final primary. It's the closest state with a primary on June 7th, which I think is the last Republican primary, because California and Montana and New Mexico and, a couple of territorial primaries are either Tuesday next, which is June 7th in podcast time, or shortly thereafter. And the territorial stuff is Democrats. So the Republican presidential preference primaries end on June 7th next week. So I may go out to South Dakota. I may not. But if you are interested in helping me do that, click on that yellow donate button at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, right over the picture of Mobile Podcast Command. Those donations go exclusively for diesel fuel, Komodo Dragon coffee, beef jerky, new tires, stuff like that for Mobile Podcast Command. And we will be heading out soon. I mentioned the air show, and I'm in the queue waiting for tickets to Burning Man. We'll see if we get them. So there's a lot of stuff planned for the summer. And I'm thinking about doing some storm chasing. You know, I'm kind of interested in that. So we'll see what happens. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. These are apps for various devices. Also, blogtalkradio.com. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I'm the Bob Davis Podcast on Instagram. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show on AM 1280 The Patriot at 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And of course, thanks for your donations, as I said, at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Thanks for listening to podcast. What is this, 507? We're on our way to 1,000. Podcast 507, the Bob Davis Podcasts.